Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Raider's Wake, a novel of Viking Age Ireland, by James L. Nelson, narrated by Sean Grindell.
We sailed our ships to any shore that offered the best hope for booty. We feared no fellow on earth. We were fit. We fought in the battle fleet. Saga of Arrowodd.
Prologue. The Saga of Thorgrim Olsen. There was a man named Thorgrim Olsen, who was known as Kveldulf, which means Night Wolf. He was called that because he would often become extremely bad-tempered in the evening, despite being generally known for his even-handedness. And some people thought he was a shapeshifter and could take the form of a wolf. Thorgrim was a farmer in a place called Vik in Norway, and like many such young men, he spent summers raiding across the Western Ocean. He sailed with a jarl named Oanulf Ravinson, who was known as Oanulf the Restless for his love of raiding, as well as feasting and drinking. Thorgrim served Oanulf as a warrior, and as the years passed, he became second to Oanulf and took responsibility for the ships and men, which was very pleasing to Oanulf as it gave him more time for feasting and drinking ale and mead. The two men became very close, and after some time Oanulf agreed to a marriage between his daughter Halbera and Thorgrim. They made a good marriage, and Halbera bore Thorgrim two sons, Odd and Harald, and a daughter named Hild. With the help of his sons and the servants and slaves, Thorgrim became a prosperous farmer, and also a man very much respected in the place where he lived. Thorgrim did not go raiding again after his marriage to Halbera. When Odd came of age and married, Thorgrim gave him a farm, which Odd worked as diligently as he had on his father's land. Harald, too, was a hard worker, but his fancy turned more toward raiding and battle, and he trained from a young age for the time he might go raiding, as his father had. Then, when Halbera died, giving birth to a second daughter, Thorgrim, in his grief, agreed to accompany Oanulf on another raiding voyage, to the land called Ireland. On this voyage he brought Harald, who was 15 years of age. It was Oanulf's intention that he and his men should sail his longship, Red Dragon, to Ireland, and there raid during the spring and summer, returning to Vik as the season grew cold and stormy. But that was not the intention of the gods. After many adventures with the Irish king, who ruled in a place called Tara, and the Danes who commanded the longport of Duvlin, Oanulf, Thorgrim, and those who still lived returned to Duvlin. It was again their wish to return to Vik, but still the gods would not allow it, and Thorgrim and the others found themselves in the longport of Vik Lo, south of Duvlin, and there, after many struggles in which Oanulf was killed in a fight with a man named Grimar, Thorgrim became the lord of Vik Lo. The following summer, Thorgrim and the other warriors at Vik Lo joined with an Irish lord and another band of men who had gone a Viking to raid the monastery at a place called Glendalough. Harald was 16 years old at the time, and had grown big and strong as a man. Indeed, his strength was greater than that of many other men, and he soon earned the name of Harald Broadarm. Harald took his place in the raiding and in the Shield War, and he proved himself a brave and valuable warrior. Thorgrim's raid on Glendalough seemed at first to be marked for great success, but it was not to be. Both the Irish lord who had first suggested the raid and the other Norsemen who were led by a man named Ottar betrayed them, and Thorgrim and Harald and no more than 10 of their men were able to escape with their lives. Thorgrim Nightwolf was not the sort who would let such a wrong go unavenged, and soon he gathered the few men he had with him and told them they would seek vengeance on those who had betrayed them. It so happened there were a number of Irish bandits, who, seeing the chance for plunder, joined with Thorgrim and the others. They were led by a man named Conan, who was well known among the thieves and bandits of that region. Soon, through means of cunning and skill, with sword and shield, Thorgrim had his revenge, killing the Irish lord and those others who had betrayed them. Then he reclaimed the longport of Vik Lo and the plunder he had gathered there for himself and his men. Thorgrim killed Ottar in a holmganga, which is a duel between two men. But in doing so, Thorgrim was gravely wounded in his legs and was not even able to walk. But a horse was found for him, and he was brought back to Viglo, and there his wounds were tended. Soon he was all but healed, and as the days of spring yielded to the full blossoming of summer, Thorgrim took his place again as the lord of Viglo. Here is what happened.
Chapter 1. Not on necks of oxen or cows is my champion's sword blunted. 'Tis on kings that the sword in Diarmuid's hand today makes a whistling noise. The Battle of Carn Honil. When the sun came up that morning, illuminating the thick blanket of grey, white and black cloud, making visible the deluge of rain that was falling and had been falling for more than a week, Brassel Mok Mreachtach was still the king of a small Tuatha to the south of Duvlin, and now, just past midday, he was dead. He died in Conondil's arms, the rain pelting his pale and frightened face, the sand under his body dark and wet. The bleeding had been considerable, and from several wounds. She had done what she could to stop it. If they had been in Brassel's hall, where she might have stripped his clothing and got to the wounds in a proper way, where there would have been warmth from a great hearth fire, then she might have saved him. But that was not how it was. They had been driven to this place by the sea, Brassel borne along by two of his men after being struck down in the first few minutes of the battle. It had been a panicked flight, and the manner in which the two bearers carried Brassel had not been gentle. That rough treatment, and the cold and the wet, and Conondil's inability to properly treat the wounds, had all led to the old man's death on that bitter, surf-scarred stretch of shingle beach. The attack had come just after first light, and it had come from the west. The first indication that any of them inside Brassel's ringfort had of any trouble in the offing was the sound of shouts and screaming, muted and far off, and the trample of horses. It was the music of some great catastrophe, and it seemed to come out of the rain itself. The distant noise had brought men to the top of the walls, straining to hear or see. But the rain blotted out most sound, and the country in the distance seemed to fade into a grey nothing.
"Raiders?"
Brucken, Mok, Brassel asked, standing next to his father on the earthen wall of the ringfort. Conondil stood beside him. She was Brucken's wife of 5 months. They had both leapt from their bed to scale the walls as the sentries shouted their alarm. They had found Brassel already there.
"Raid is for certain," Brassel said. "But who?"
"Fengul?" Conondil asked. "The heathens?"
It terrified her just to say the words. She had been taken by the heathens the past summer, bound away for the slave markets of Frisia, when God had sent her the means of salvation. She knew it had to be God, because her escape was so like a miracle, even if she did bring it about by fornicating with one of the heathens and fleeing as he slept. But that was past, confessed, and forgiven.
"Could be the heathens," Brassel said, "but I would not expect them to come from the west. If they were going to raid, they would come from the sea, I would think."
The Tuatha that Brassel ruled was on the coast, and the ring fort not far from the beach from which the local fishermen put out to sea in leather-covered boats to cast their nets.
"That horror's son Ochu, then," Brocken suggested.
Ochu was the reed Tuatha of the lands that neighboured Brassel's, and like all good neighbours in Ireland, they were forever raiding one another. But they were castle raids, mainly, quick forays over the border to scoop up the other's cows, the chief measure of wealth in Ireland. But what they were hearing was no castle raid. Through all this discussion, Conondil was desperate to point out what to her was obvious. It did not matter much who was attacking, only that the people out there needed help. But as a woman, and a woman new to the family and the Rach, it was hardly her place to point that out. Happily, Brucken realized as much before Conondil could stand it no more.
"Whoever this bastard is, we have to meet them," he said, and those words seemed to spur everyone to move.
Brassel, and then Brucken, and then the sentries flew down the ladder to the grounds below. The Rí Tuatha and his son bellowing for sword and shield, for the houseguard to turn out, for horses to be brought.
The sound of distant shouting was louder, closer by the time the gates to the Rach were thrown open, and the 24 armed men sallied forth.
Brassel and Brocken were mounted, as were a few of their chief men,
but most were on foot. Some were armed with swords and shields, some with axes, but most carried shields and spears, the easiest weapon to make, the easiest to wield, and one of the most effective. They were still coming out of the gate when the first people came running out of the fog and the mist, maybe a quarter mile away. It was hard to see what was happening. Conadil, who was trailing behind, had to wipe rain from her eyes as she blinked into the distance. She could see people running, women, men, children. She could see them stumbling, crawling, getting to their feet again. Behind them, men with spears and swords, their round, bright painted shields looking dull in that light. "This is bad," she thought. "This is very bad." Real defense of the Tuatha required the men of those lands to arm, and to gather, and to put themselves under the leadership of Brassel. A minor king like him, a man of no great wealth, could not afford to keep men-at-arms. He had a small house guard, but for real numbers he had to rely on those who owed him military service, the poor farmers, the Boera and Fyrre. They were no great fighting men, but they could use a spear, and that was often all that it took. But whoever had launched this attack had come in the night, waited until it was light enough to see, and fell on the people before the men could be called to arms. And now the farmers were running, fleeing in terror, and there was little chance their leaders, Brassel and Brocken, could organize them to fight back. But Conadil knew they would die trying, and she cursed her bitter luck and this horrible fate. She had just escaped the hell of the Fingal, had found a husband, heir to this land, a fine home, and now these bastards had come in the night to take it all. But she would not be taken, not again. Like her husband, she would die making a stand.
"Onward! Onward!"
Brassel shouted, sword over his head, pointing toward the people rushing for the illusionary safety of the ringfort. It had been years since the old man had been in battle, but he'd lost none of the courage that had made him so loved by the people he ruled. Together, Brassel and Brocken spurred their horses, leading the way forward, but keeping the animals to a slow trot so the others might keep up. They had swords held high, shields on their arms. They, alone among all the men there, wore mail shirts that gleamed dully and made a jingling sound as they rode. Conadil walked behind the column of men and off to the side, so her view of the action ahead was not blocked by the soldiers. She had no idea what she might do in the middle of a fight, had given no thought to why she was advancing more or less at her husband's side. She just knew she could not stay behind in the ringfort, could not spend this time praying and worrying and wondering what was going on. The shouting and screaming was louder now. Conadil looked off beyond the mounted figures of Brassel and Brocken. The people were a couple of hundred yards away, still running, stumbling, the women screaming in terror. Now and then one of the men would turn and raise whatever pathetic weapon he held, an axe or a pitchfork or a scythe, in an attempt to fight back. They might as well have been holding feathers for all the good it did them, the men-at-arms at their heels cutting them down with hardly a pause. "It's like driving deer," Conadil thought. The people were like deer being driven by the men behind, the heathens or Ochu's men, or whoever it was. These men must have swept through the countryside and herded the people together and pushed them forward, the way servants will round up deer and drive them to be killed for the amusement of some great king. And then the fleeing people of the Tuatha ran headlong into the armed men, who had gone out to defend them, and it was chaos. Brassel had come down from his horse and was trying to get his men to form a shield wall of some sort, when the terrified people collided with his line, clawing and scrambling and fighting to get past, to put the armed men from the ringfort between themselves and their attackers. Brassel's line collapsed under that assault, what little order he had created torn apart, and he was just trying to get the men back under command when the attackers fell on them. They came with spears mostly, and swords and their round shields. Like Brassel's men, they were not well organized, having been driving the people ahead of them. But they were not hampered by the panicked women and children, and they hit Brassel's line like a massive breaking wave. Conadil saw Brassel go down in that first assault, and she screamed in horror and panic.
She loved the old man, her father-in-law, nearly as much as she loved her husband. But now, as she watched, he disappeared under the swell of fighting men, spears and swords thrusting back and forth. Brucken roared, a great bear's roar, a sound Conondil had never heard from him, and he charged forward, shield up, sword slashing back and forth, hacking and thrusting, and clearing a swathe of men away from his fallen father. His courage drove the men under his command, and they too pushed forward, meeting the raiders shield for shield, spear for spear. Not heathens, Conondil thought. These men, these raiders, they were not Fingal. They did not wear mail or leather armor, and they did not have the pointed iron helmets and shields with their wicked pagan images painted on their faces. These were Irishmen.
"Why are you doing this?" she screamed at the top of her lungs. "You bastards, forsaken by God!"
It was not as if she expected an answer. It was just that the whole nightmare was so unreal that she could not contain herself. She reached down and picked up an axe that one of the fleeing men had dropped. Not a battle axe, but the sort used to chop kindling for the hearth or the heads off chickens. Still, it had an edge, it could kill, and that was all she wanted. She raced forward, ready to do anything, perfectly ready to die in defense of this life she had built, this fine life that she enjoyed for the first time in the 20 or so years she had been on this earth. The nearest of the attackers was maybe 10 feet away, and Conondil charged for him, axe raised over her shoulder. She realized she was shrieking, but she could not really tell what shrieking was hers and what was coming from the others locked in the fight. Rain ran down her face and hair, and her clothing was soaked through and heavy. The man she was set on wore a dark green brat and carried a shield painted red. He had a spear over his head as if he was going to throw it, but instead he was darting it back and forth, stabbing when he saw his chance. The tip of the spear was shining bright red, and then the rain washed it clean. He didn't see Conondil coming until the last moment. He seemed to sense the movement to his left and turned to look. What he saw likely did not impress him. Conondil stood a little over 5 feet and weighed maybe 7 stone. The first suggestion of a smile was forming on his lips when Conondil's axe came down and split his skull, burying itself up to the handle in his head. The man's eyes crossed, and blood erupted from around the axe blade, and he went down fast, driven down by the force of the blow. Conondil tried to hang on to the axe, but it was lodged firmly in the dead man's skull, and the handle was wet, and it pulled from her grip. By the time the man had crumpled completely, Conondil could see she had other problems. The raiders, who had been thrown back by the ferocity of Brocken's attack, had formed up again, and now they were surging forward. Brocken's men were starting to waver, and Conondil had the feeling they would break soon and start to run. She was right. The men who were not engaged in the fight began to fade back, and others around them began to fade back as well. Conondil saw her husband looking desperately around, looking for men to stand with him. She saw his mouth open as he shouted something. Encouragement, orders, curses, but she could not hear the words. Then everyone was running. Conondil was not aware of the moment it happened. It just seemed as if in one instant the men were fighting, and in the next they were running. And Conondil turned and ran as well, because there was nothing else to do. She ran with the house guard and with a few farmers who had stopped in their flight to join the battle line. She ran with the enemy at her heels, and the ring fort gaping open a few hundred yards ahead. But then there were riders, mounted warriors with long spears sweeping in on the left, racing ahead of the running men pushing for the ring fort, cutting off that avenue of retreat. The Rah, Conondil thought. Her only thought had been to get to the Rah, the only place in all her life she had actually felt as if she was safe. And now, with the horsemen outpacing them, flanking them, driving them, the Rah was beyond her reach, and she felt the last bits of hope like rust flaking away. She kept running. She ran with the others. She caught a glimpse of Brocken, last of the men to flee, and she wished he would run faster. She caught a glimpse of Brassel, carried like some carcass by two of his men, but she had to guess he still lived, or surely they would have left him on the field. But mostly, she just ran. The ring fort was half a mile from the shingle beach the fishermen used, and the people were racing down the beaten road that ran to that place. Conondil had an idea that if they could get to the beach, there might be boats enough for them all to get out to sea and escape. They did not have to get far. A few hundred yards would do it. Just beyond the distance of a spear throw or a bow shot if these men had bows and arrows. Suddenly, she felt hope. She did not know if the others were thinking about the boats or if they were just in mindless flight, but it didn't matter. Once they reached the shore, saw the boats, they would think of that too. And even if there were not boats enough for all, there would certainly be a place for Brassel and his son, Brocken. And that was all that Conondil was worried about. She would happily die at the end of one of these bastard spears, if she could see her beloved husband safe off in a boat. She stumbled, straightened, raced on. Her breath was coming harder, her chest burning, and she realized that Brocken would never get in a boat if there were others still on the beach. He would be the last aboard. He would have it no other way. That was why she loved him, because that was the sort of man he was. The land sloped away down to the water. Not one of the ragged cliffs that marked much of the coast, but an easy grade down to the shingle. She wanted to yell out, to tell them about the boats, to order them to get in the boats and hope they obeyed. She crested the rise that ran down to the sea and saw the beach stretched out before her, as if it had been laid there for her inspection. A half mile of sand and gravel from north to south, stretched out in a gentle curve, capped at either end by short, steep headlands that blocked the view of the coast beyond. The grassy meadows ended in a sharp brown line, and after that there was only beach for 50 yards down to the breaking sea. There were a dozen boats there. They were floating free, 300 feet from shore. Conondil let out a cry of despair as she stumbled the last 100 yards down to the beach. It was as far as she could go, as far as her gasping lungs would move her. She collapsed in the sand, sucking in air, was conscious of the many people swarming around her, unsure what to do now. She heard her husband calling orders, getting men in line, setting up whatever defense he could. She remembered Brassel, her father-in-law, their reed to her. She forced herself to her feet, staggered around the beach until she found where the men had deposited him in the sand. He was bloody for half a dozen wounds. His skin was very white, his eyes blinking slowly. Conondil grabbed the edges of the torn mail and pulled the tears wider to get to the wounds. She tore open his clothing underneath, pulled her knife and cut strips of cloth from Brassel's cloak. She bound his wounds as best she could, but the mail shirt made it impossible to do so with much effect. An odd quiet had come to the beach, and Conondil wondered why they had not yet been attacked. She looked up from her work. The raiders were drawn up in a line near the crest of the hill that ran up from the beach. They had swung around so they could approach from the south. Why, Conondil could not guess. It would mean crossing more beach to bring the fight home. They seemed to be taking their time, getting their men in order, forming a line of shields. In front of her, on the beach, Brocken was doing the same. She turned back to Brassel. The old man was shivering, and his eyes were wide, and his mouth part way open. Conondil put her arms behind him and lifted him, surprised she had the strength, and held him pressed to her.
"I love you, Lord Brassel, and I thank you for your kindness, and I commend your soul to God."
She heard the old man take a gasping breath, felt him shake one last time in her arms, and then he was still. Conondil laid him down gently and closed his eyes. She looked up again. The line of men on the hill was advancing now, slowly, methodically, marching in a line that hardly wavered as it came toward them, stretched out over 100 feet.
"Stand steady," she heard Brocken shout. "Stand ready, and murder these bastards when they come."
The enemy came closer, and the numbers were not so much greater than those of her husband's were, and that gave her hope. Sure, the fighting men advancing on them seemed better armed, better trained. They were not just a small house guard and a handful of frightened farmers. Nonetheless, while they might be superior men-at-arms, they were not greatly superior. But whatever happened, Conondil would not be taken. That much she promised herself. She would not be a slave again. If the battle was lost to them, then Brocken would certainly die fighting, and she would die with him. Brassel's sword was long gone, but he had a sea axe on his belt, and Conondil bent over and pulled it free. She was willing to die with Brocken, but like her husband, she would make the bastards buy her life at the cost of some of their own. Maybe she and her short sword could make a difference in the fight. She had already reduced the enemy's numbers by one. She took a step forward, ready to take her place in the shield wall, even if she had no shield. And then she heard a sound behind her. An odd sound, like a shovel thrust into gravel. She spun around. The sound was the bow of a ship, a heathen longship, running up on the beach. It had come around the headland to the north. Conondil knew that because a second one was just now appearing around that spit of land. She opened her mouth to shout a warning, but her words were cut off by the sound of the Fingal warriors screaming their battle cry as they leapt over the sides of their ship, and the hellish cries of the raiders on the hill, who were now charging down on Brocken and his men. Conondil took a deep breath. She raised the sea axe high, and with a warrior's cry in her throat, she charged at the Northmen, leaping into the surf. Chapter 2. He is Simpleton, named who has naught to say, for such is the fashion of fools. Odin's Quest after the Songmead. It had been raining nearly non-stop for a week. The various side roads that criss-crossed Vík Lo, and even the plank road that ran down the centre of the Longport, were swamped with mud. It was early summer, yet everyone in the walled town felt the need to keep fires burning, and still the dampness pervaded everything. Clothes, skin, blankets, food. The ale tasted watery, the bread was limp and soggy. But for all that, it was the fight over the pig that finally brought Thorgrim Nightwolf to enlightenment. He was sitting in the big chair with the carved arms and back that was set up in his hall. The fire in the hearth in the centre of the room was built up high, the flames driving some of the gloom from the blaze. But the light could not reach everywhere, and the corners of the hall were still lost in deep shadow, despite it being early in the undawn, the mid-afternoon. Off in one of those corners, he could hear his son, Harald, snoring as he slept on a pile of furs. It was unusual for Harald to be sleeping during the day. He was a young man of enormous energy, and he usually channeled that energy into work. Since their return to Vík Lo, following the disastrous raid on Glendalough, after their weeks in exile as they fought for vengeance and to reclaim their rightful place, Harald had hardly stopped. With a large gang of men under his command, he had repaired and expanded the plank road, built a pier out into the river that formed the shorefront of the Longport, repaired the damage that Thorgrim's hall had suffered under Ottar's brief rule, and strengthened the wall that separated Vík Lo from the Irish countryside. It had rained on and off since their return, but Harald and his men had pressed on through the downpours, despite the added difficulty and misery of working in the wet and the mud. But then one afternoon it had started in raining, and it had not stopped, and it did not seem like it would ever stop. Harald and his men had accomplished everything of use they could think to do, and anything else seemed just like killing time, which no one had much interest in doing. So the day's work came to an end, and now Harald slept. Thorgrim shifted uncomfortably in his chair as he kept his eyes on the man in front of him. The man was speaking, and Thorgrim realized he had not been listening at all. He had no idea what the man had said during the last few minutes of his rambling discourse. He felt a dull ache in his legs where Ottar's sword had opened up two ugly lacerations. They were mostly healed, but they still gave him pain on occasion, and he reckoned they always would. Just like the stab wound in his left shoulder, and all the other injuries he had suffered over the years.
"And so I must have told him a dozen times, Lord, a dozen times at least," the man was saying, "to keep the damned animals penned up."
Thorgrim straightened and
Sample complete. Ready to continue?